Hello, welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kaba Tafoe. In Myanmar's Rakhine State remains extremely tense after several outbreaks of violence between Buddhist and Muslim communities since 2012 that has killed scores, displacing some 140,000 people, mainly from the Rohingya minority. And it appears the bloodshed continues into the new year, even though Myanmar has opened itself to the West. The government claims of democratic reforms, is that just window dressing? Well, in this edition of The Debate, we're going to be discussing why this violence against the Muslims continue, often with the government forces present there, the true intentions of the West in Myanmar, and the role of Nobel Peace Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi.
A Buddhist mob rampaged through a town in an isolated corner of Myanmar, hacking Muslim women and children with knives. That's according to witnesses and rights groups. The Thailand-based Arakan Project, an advocacy group that's been documenting abuses against Rohingya Muslims for more than a decade, says the violence that took place in the western Rakhine State early Tuesday left between 10 and 60 people dead. The northern tip of the state, where the violence occurred, is home to 80% of Myanmar's Rohingyas, considered by the UN to be one of the most persecuted minorities in the world. The region is also one of the most isolated in the country, with access to foreign journalists and humanitarian aid workers almost always either denied or heavily restricted. That's why news of violence against Rohingyas often trickles in through witnesses and rights groups amid conflicting reports. Rohingya Muslims are regarded by the government as a stateless minority in the predominantly Buddhist nation, whose movements are strictly controlled by a heavy security presence. Myanmar's government considers the estimated 800,000 Rohingya in the country to be foreigners, while local Buddhists look down on them as illegal immigrants and view them with hostility. For nearly 2 years, the area has been known to be the scene of violence against the Rohingyas, with hundreds left dead and thousands of others displaced. Myanmar's fledgling government that took power in 2011 is under fire for its treatment of minorities. Earlier in the week, the rights group Women's League of Myanmar accused the military of using rape as a weapons of war against minorities. The group has also said that the army personnel had raped over 100 women and girls over the past couple of years as part of their campaign against minority groups in the South Asian country. Myanmar's opposition figure Aung San Suu Kyi, who's been much heralded by the West as a democracy icon, has also turned a blind eye to the plight of Rohingyas, which seems likely to remain under the shadow of neglect by the majority of the international community.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. From the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Qasem joins us from London, and campaign coordinator for U.S. Campaign for Burma, Myra Dagipal joins us from Washington. I'd like to welcome both of our guests. Myra Dagipal, let me first start with you. Not a good start for this new year in Myanmar. This most recent incident, the Buddhist mob attacking Rohingya Muslims, various numbers in terms of the deaths, anywhere from 10 to 60. And yet more alarming, a repeated scenario, government security forces were present there. Why is this continuing?
Well, first, thanks for having me. And indeed, this is not a good start for the new year. Well, in terms of why they keep doing what they're doing, firstly, because the military is still on top of the power chain. So no matter the current government would want to do something good for the people of Burma, but if the military is still on top of the power chain and not allow him to do what he needs to do, then there is no way that he can success his the plan he wants to put up for the people. Secondly, because the Constitution doesn't allow these groups of minorities, the Rohingya people, to be part of the people of Burma. The Constitution is there that's blocking all the opportunity for the Rohingya people to become the citizen of Burma. And also on top of that, why the perpetrators keep continuing keep abusing the people of Rohingya is because there is no justice and accountability. Nobody gets punished for the actions they are taking. All the persecution happens with impunity. And therefore, those who persecute these people, they keep doing it because they don't get punished. So, I mean, why would they be afraid of doing the bad thing they keep doing?
You know, that's an accusation Reza Kazem leveled against the military on more than one occasion, that they're not receiving enough punishment. And I'd like to move on to another case involving actually 100 cases of which the military has been accused of using rape as a weapon of war. Based on a group by the name of the Women's League of Burma, 100 cases of rape, some involving children as young as 8, have occurred. So this puts into question the military. This puts into question how this government was touted to be a democracy and accepted by the West at the same time.
I think that question is well posed, and the issue is also what the role is of Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been, you know, as it said in your clip, has been much heralded. The problem is that Aung San Suu Kyi and the junta are complicit. It's not a case, as it was said, and I'd like to take issue with what was said in there, that she's turning a blind eye to what's going on. She has confirmed that these people are stateless. This community, who has been in existence in that country before the current state of Myanmar even existed, you know, let's not forget that. These people are being told that they do not belong here, and this is something that Aung San Suu Kyi is confirming. So she's not turning a blind eye. She's actually complicit with the junta in terms of making sure that these people are going to be targeted. So I think the fact that these reports are actually coming out with these rapes having been carried out, Aung San Suu Kyi bears responsibility. She is being heralded by the international community when in fact these things are going on under her watch. And it is important for the international community to hold Aung San Suu Kyi accountable for what has actually happened and how she has been complicit in this. It is awful that, you know, the Nobel Peace Prizes seem to be being awarded in recent years to people who are involved in these atrocities that are actually taking place and allowing atrocities to take place under their watch.
Well, let's expand on that a little bit more. First of all, Myra Dagupa, do you agree with what Reza Kazem has said about Aung San Suu Kyi, that she's complicit with the government there?
I have nothing much to say about that. I somewhat agree with him. The only comment I would have to put on here is that now she is a politician, and she said that herself. She's a politician. She's not an activist. So, but my question is, a politician cannot speak out on behalf of the people anymore. A politician cannot address human rights abuses that goes on in my country anymore. That's my bigger question. If a politician cannot speak up for the people, then what is the whole point for a politician is in politics and doing the work on behalf of the people?
Well, Reza Kazem, a politician cannot speak on behalf of the people is what our guest there has said.
One of the things that, if I can come in there.
Go ahead.
If I can come in there, I mean, one of the concerns is that, you know, even the UN, with all its limitations, has actually said that these people should be given citizenship by the government of Myanmar. And yet, despite that, Aung San Suu Kyi is not saying anything to that effect. In fact, she's opposing that. And that in itself is problematic. I think the fact that she's a politician, well, of course she's a politician, but that doesn't mean that she can become complicit in the policy of the junta and putting you know, the kind of acceptable face of you know, the worst excesses of the military by putting her face on in front of it. When it's not just putting her face in front of it, she's actually saying what the junta are saying. And just because she's saying it is not what should be the judge or the criterion of the problem. The fact that she's a politician and the fact that she's involved in this makes her even more culpable and even more answerable to these accusations, to say that, okay, what is going to be done about the fact that her statements are legitimizing in that country what the junta are doing and what these Buddhist monks, so-called, are actually doing in that country. They need to be held responsible. The politicians, whatever persuasion they are, including Aung San Suu Kyi, should be held responsible for the atrocities that have been committed as a result of the actions that have been carried out by her legitimizing that. You know, even the UN, as I stated earlier, has said that these should be given citizens. These people are citizens of this country. They've been around before, long before the state of Myanmar has been around, and they should be given this citizenship. So why has that not been done? Why is it that the government, the international community, is allowing this to happen when this policy of discrimination, this policy of oppression, is being continued against a minority? I mean, this is almost being seen that the Muslims, who are one of the most oppressed, the Myanmar Muslims are one of the most oppressed groups in the world, who are powerless to defend themselves, are being targeted in this way, being killed, being raped, and the world is staying silent, as far as, in particular, the powerful nations are involved, and they are sidling up to Aung San Suu Kyi and continuing to legitimize it. It is the continual policy of the Western governments to carry on this oppression as long as they can get what they actually want from this.
Well, Mayor Dagba, why is the international community, as our guest there in London posed the question, reacting to what is going on? In particular, perhaps we could use the United States as an example.
I'm sorry, sir, what's your question again?
Talking about the inaction of the international community. In particular, we could look at Western countries, most notably, obviously, the United States. Even though the U.S. President Barack Obama visited Myanmar, I believe it was back in November, it still is not really coming to the forefront of the plight or the cause of what the Rohingya Muslims are all about and the atrocities that are occurring regarding them.
Well, the United States is a little bit tricky, but also I think, to me, they are trying to look for ways for their own benefit too. It's not, well, in the public, they might be talking about trying to do something good for the people of Burma, but at the same time, they cannot really ignore the fact that the abuses are still going on. We've been informing them. They've been updated on regular basis. It's not they don't know about what's going on. They do know, and they can do a whole lot because they have the power. But at the same time, they worry that they're going to upset the Burmese government so that the Burmese government would stop, continue the reform process, which I don't think this is irrelevant at all. They should have done better. They should point out to the Burmese authority that you have to treat these people as human beings, but not just kill them for no reason. Otherwise, you don't get the rewards you're supposed to get. But right now, the problem is the U.S. government just keep away every leverage. They just keep out the carrots. There is no more fish. And this is the reason where the Burmese authority keep doing what they're doing, because they don't have to be afraid.
Well, let's look at what there is, how the West is viewing Myanmar, Reza Kazım, if we can, in terms of the advantages that it sees in Myanmar. And again, I have to bring in the United States here. And the reason why I'm bringing in the United States again is because, well, I could talk about the pivot to the southeast, of which is trying to take away Myanmar, take away Bangladesh from the sphere of China. And it is said that if the United States has is going to place their military and strategic interests inside Myanmar and inside, for example, Bangladesh, that it's going to then look the other way, perhaps, with some of these crimes that are going on. Do you think that is the case?
I think it's not just a case of looking the other way. I mean, yes, of course, the United States and in its throughout its history has used violence and bloodshed to project its power and use the influence. What is going on here on a local level is this idea that they can actually, the junta and Aung San Suu Kyi are using the rape, torture, killing of Muslims as a tool of bonding with each other, and trying to use that as a common enemy and something that can actually be done to make sure that this is going to continue. I mean, let's face it, ethnic cleansing is going on here. You know, we've got potential genocide in the making, and really people need to wake up to this. The fact that the United States wants to you know, have a pivot and move towards this and is moving that, I mean, I think it's more than that. I mean, there are things that they can actually do. The Myanmar Muslims are not exactly in the powerful elite where they can actually influence whether the US is going to be able to have influence in that region or not. This is just one, you know, killing of a grand scale going on, and people are doing it because they can get away with it. And it is about making sure that you know, resources, etc., all of those things can actually be taken and redistributed according to how these Buddhist monks, so-called, are and the you know, the junta and Aung San Suu Kyi wish to have that being done. And I think we need to keep that perspective in mind as to what is going on with regards to that.
Well, there's a point here that we keep coming back to, and that's how the military, for example, gets away with some of these crimes that are committed. And I'd like to ask you, Mario Dog, about who's running the country. It appears like Thein Sein is somewhat captive under the military, or afraid of the military. I mean, is that the case? Because he's come out and he's promised the reforms, which still some say are window dressing. But the military is committing these crimes, and as our guest there, Reza Qasem, said, some amounting to war crimes and genocide.
Well, one thing I wanted to make it clear is that no matter what the president thinks he says, the bottom line, he doesn't have the power over the military. The commander-in-chief, who is Lee Ong-mei, is the top of the power chain. He is the boss, the bottom line, he is the boss of thinking, if I can make it as simple as that. And therefore, no matter the actions that has been taken by the Burmese military, thinking cannot even stay much. For instance, in the past couple of years, thinking when the fighting was going on in Kachin State, which is still going on, thinking gave orders three times to the military troops to stop the fighting. You know what answer that came back? You're not our leader. We don't take command from you. We take command from the commander-in-chief. If that is the case, then where is the power of the president? And therefore, the perpetrators will keep committing crimes, but he cannot really say much, even though he gave a lot of promise to the international community, to the Burmese people, to everybody in this world. He cannot give that promise because he doesn't have that supreme power.
Reza Qasem, there was a quote by one of the local TV stations, and one of the personalities there, I'm going to refrain from using which TV station and whom, who said the government is using Aung San Suu Kyi's image as a democracy icon to promote and protect their way of reform. The government's strategy is one of using your enemy's good name to reach your own objective. What is the strategy there in terms of reaching their own objective? What is their objective, using Aung San Suu Kyi's name, who's their enemy, to promote their own agenda?
Well, I wonder how much of an enemy she is. I mean, she has joined hands with the junta, hasn't she? And if she has joined hands with the junta and saying the kind of things that she is saying, then how is it any different? When we are talking about, you know, the lady from the States mentioned that, you know, there were reforms actually underway. Well, I don't think the Myanmar Muslims are actually seeing any of these reforms in action. It seems to be that it's pretty much business as usual, and you know, and a lot worse, in fact, than what it was before. So it's a case of, well, okay, how many people can we get over, buy over, or get over on our side to actually make sure that we can continue this terrorism. And this ethnic cleansing process, and continue to keep the power. And the issue is that the people, the Western governments, have signed up to this agenda that these people will be allowed, will be given legitimacy, and once they've been given legitimacy, they can carry on doing whatever it is that they're doing because they have got Aung San Suu Kyi brought over to their side, and so therefore everything is okay now. Whereas actually what's happening on the ground seems to have got a lot worse for the Myanmar Muslims. And you know, and the question is that how is that in any way going to, I don't see enemies conversing or saying anything politically, and the statements that are actually being put out there by Aung San Suu Kyi and the junta are not much different. So when they say, oh, we're using Aung San Suu Kyi, she is saying the same thing. And we need to stop legitimizing this. And we need to stop thinking that there are reforms going on. We need to start saying that this is ethnic cleansing. You know, I've said this before. It's ethnic cleansing, and this is looking like the making of a genocide. These people are the most oppressed. They're the most powerless people in the world. They've got no means to defend themselves. People are running rampage and torturing, raping, etc., killing. And they haven't got any which way to defend themselves. And it is, I think it's necessary for people to start thinking about what can be done for those people to be defended, and how they can actually start, perhaps, tools by which they can start defending themselves.
Very well, we're going to have to unfortunately leave it there. We're fresh out of time. From the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Qasim spoke to us there from London, and campaign coordinator for U.S. Campaign for Burma, Myra Dagupas, spoke to us from Washington. Thanks for watching another edition of The Debate from Mikaba Tafwa and the entire team in the capital, Tafwa. It's goodbye.